Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the episode of Soul Empowerment Radio. I'm your host, Michael Brezel, and it's another beautiful day here in Columbia, South Carolina. Hopefully it's a beautiful day where you are. Every day is a beautiful day if we're breathing, right? Or that's the hope, at least. If it's not a beautiful day, take a moment to breathe into that. You know, sometimes that stuff that may be cloudy or may be difficult, just is calling your awareness to it. So bring your awareness to those parts of yourself that may be feeling a bit more cloudy, a bit more constricted. So give yourself a chance to look at those things. You know, everything is an opportunity for us to grow. Everything offers us an opportunity to step into presence. So don't miss those opportunities. Don't shun them and push them away. You know, let them be points of awakening instead of points of disconnection. So thank you all for tuning in. I appreciate it, as always, for you joining me here on the show. It's always wonderful for me to see so many wonderful people downloading the episodes in the future and tuning in live. So those of you who are listening live tonight, we have a special show tonight. We have a returning special guest, Travis Sanders, is going to be joining us here in a few moments. A little housekeeping first. Remember, if you do want to schedule a session with me, or if you want to get in touch with our guest, you can contact me at michael@michaelbrezel.com. Go to my website, michael@michaelbrezel.com, to see all the wonderful things that I will be doing coming up here shortly. I revamped my website a lot. I really streamline it. I'm at a point now where I'm moving towards authenticity. I'm doing more work that is focused on healing and getting people not from point A to point B, but just getting them into the process. Because we're already going from point A to point B. It's just about getting you awake and aware that you're already in the process of going to point B, C, D, E, and whatever else you're going to. So that's what I do in a session. And we're going to be doing healing sessions on the air starting later this week. So, you know, stay tuned for all of that. What else? Yeah, so we'll try to be here every night. We're going to be off air a couple of nights this week just because we have some things happening here. My mother's going in for a surgery, so send plenty of healing energy our way if you feel called to do so. It's always appreciated. And the extra healing is always welcomed. I do appreciate, can't ever say that enough. I appreciate you because without you, there wouldn't be a show. So if you do like the show and want to help support us, you can always click the donate button at the bottom of my services page on my website, michaelbrazel.com. And on that page, you can, make a donation to help keep the show up and running so that we can continue to bring you all these wonderful healing episodes and special guests and just wonderfulness. So let's just take a moment to breathe and to show up. Let's take a moment just to be here before we move forward. And let's just take a moment to arrive into the breath. And let's begin with a simple invocation to God herself. Holy Mother, in whom we live, move, and have our being. From you all things emerge, and unto you all things return. Open our hearts this blessed day. Touch our bodies and our minds. Walk with us through the gates of power, in shadow and starlight, in fire meeting earth, in wind on the ocean, and the sweet kiss of life. Blessed be our journey. Some of my favorite versions of the Star Goddess invocation. It's from Thorne Coyle's book, Evolutionary Witchcraft. I just love that invocation. It's just such a powerful invocation. And it's just a great place for us to start. So tonight we're going to be talking about a lot of really wonderfully exciting things. So without further ado, I'll bring on our special guest, Mr. Travis Sanders. He's no stranger to Soul Empowerment Radio. Here's a little bit about Travis. Travis James Sanders' unique story began at early age, but took a major turn at age of 16 when a psychic reading changed the course of his life forever. At 25, Travis is young but accomplished psychic medium who appeared on national television regarding his work with spirit. Travis has been featured on both A News Psychic Kids, Children of the Paranormal, as well as Entertainment Tonight's The Insider. And could be seen on Nancy Grace, as well as numerous news stations. He appeared on a variety of radio stations, including Paravision, Parax, K-Rock, as well as CBS Radio. He's a certified Reiki teacher and also received paraprofessional training in the psychic arts. This is certified by Doreen Virtue. As well as undergone training at Lilydale with Lilydale medium and author Sharon Klingler. What does all this mean? Everything and nothing. Travis is just a soul on a journey with passion, just like you. So without further ado, because he does a lot of other things too, and we'll be talking about those other things tonight, I believe. So without further ado, let's bring on Travis. Hey, Travis, are you there?
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Great. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I always like chatting with you.
Absolutely. It's been a while. So how are things on your spiritual end over there?
Crazy beautiful, but good.
Excellent.
Yeah, no, things have been, there's been a lot of changes in ways that I think are very positive. But of course, mm-hmm. with any sort of change or transition, there's always going to be the stresses that go with it, but it's good. I've been in a good place, and like you said, it's been a while since we've talked, so I'm really looking forward to tonight.
Excellent. So when we were discussing what we were going to be discussing tonight, and I think the thing that I love about having you on is because we can really talk about all these other things, because I think sometimes, we kind of get typecast as, especially when we do like psychic work or intuitive work, we get typecast as New Agers, but we're not really that, we're also like, I study, fairy witchcraft and you study hoodoo. And I think these other parts of us that don't often get to come forward. So I love when you come on because all that stuff gets to come forward. And last we talked, you were going through hoodoo training, correct?
Yeah.
And so are you coming to, and you said you're coming to the end of your training now. How's that going for you?
So I started, it'll be a year, I think, this January that I actually started the official course. My introduction to root work was probably, it started when a friend of mine actually gifted me a book, and this was several years ago. He says, I don't know why I've felt guided to give this to you, but you know, someone gifted this to me a long time ago. It didn't resonate with me, and I just felt guided to give it to you. And it was Catherine Ironwood's Urban Root Magic book. And that's what really started it all. And it was shortly after that that I came across the work of Mama Starkasis. And with regards to her work, I really, you know, it drew me in, it interested me, it resonated. I wanted to explore more. So I ended up getting her book, the Conjure Workbook, which to this day is one of my favorite Conjure books that there are. And as I was going through it, I was learning a lot along the way. But if anyone is familiar with Mama Star's work, you know that there's a certain style in which she speaks, and there's a certain style in which she writes, and a lot of it is reading between the lines. And as I was going through the books and the practices, I found that I was really confused, and I thought that there was a lack of clarity. And so in listening to a lot of the radio shows and learning the style of how she speaks and how she talks and things like that, the book began to make sense. And so I learned in a very self-taught way for a couple of years, just different resources, trial and error, digging into the Bible and the Psalms and just trying different things from different perspectives, the more of the Louisiana perspective and the Appalachian perspective, and just taste testing different samples of folk magic and kind of finding my own style, which led us to last year, her offering opening, the Conjure Academy, and taking on a group of students to go through a very, I guess, as close to hands-on without actually being in person as you can get, year-long course. And so I've been doing that over the course of the past year. And for a while, you know, a lot of the things in the beginning were basics, because a lot of the people who were starting off didn't have any sort of background or a lot of experience with any sort of root work. But as we've gotten closer towards the final module, it's really getting into more of the nitty-gritty, which is what I've been waiting for. Taking a lot of the things that I knew in an intellectual way, but putting it into a context that made sense in a whole other way that I didn't quite grasp before. So, you know, for a while I was sort of feeling like I was hitting a bit of a wall with it, and now I'm starting to see different applications in ways that I maybe wasn't getting earlier on.
Wow. Sounds like an exciting adventure. It's always great to take on new training. It's like, you know, I just did the quantum healing hypnosis therapy training, and it really, like, empowered. I was more surprised not at that what I got from the training, but how it spilled over into everything else that I was doing and kind of enlivened everything else. How do you feel that's happening with this training or with this, you know, because you're still exploring, like, all the different avenues that Hoodoo itself can offer. How do you feel and find that spilling over into the other areas of your work?
It's really interesting, because I think that not just in regards to, like, my personal practice, but for anyone who does any sort of metaphysical work in general, you know, you were talking about how lots of times psychic and mediums sort of get typecast and things of that nature, but it really seems like anyone who does any form of spirit work, once you, I guess, peel away the layers and get to the core of it, there's always sort of like a commonality or a common ground where one thing can lend itself to another. And one of the things that I've really noticed for myself is as to where in some of the earlier days, I really struggled with openly owning the title of being a conjure man or a root worker or whatever title you want to use, because I felt like if people knew that I was practicing folk magic, would that damage my credibility or my reputation as a clairvoyant or as a medium? And I don't carry that so much anymore. And the other thing that I've noticed is that as to where before, the practices I kept very separate, they do lend themselves to each other. And, you know, as to where before it was something that I did. Now it's just a part of my everyday life, you know, even to the point of how I arrange the furniture in my house, or, you know, the all sorts of things that I never really thought about before are being influenced by my understanding of folk magic, and not just, you know, root work or conjure, but even my aspect, different aspects of healing. One of the things that I've really become interested in and have put a lot of study into lately is the practice of powwow doctoring, or braukery, like they call in the Pennsylvania Dutch areas. And it was kind of neat how it came into my experience. When I was in high school, or just out of high school, a close friend of mine, he kind of became one of those adopted family members, and his aunts, who I'd never met, but his aunt used to do this thing called talking the fire out. And, of course, his family knew that I did things like Reiki and the readings and stuff like that. And I remember one day one of them got burned, and they're like, oh, call Aunt so-and-so and let her talk the fire out. And I'm like, what is this? You know, this is fascinating. So the one day she actually agreed to teach me how to do this. And the way that she was taught by this old hillbilly man on his deathbed. And she told me, you know, it always alternates. You can only teach someone of the opposite gender, and it can't be someone who's blood relation, so she was able to teach me. And so I started talking the fire out, which consists of some hand gestures and like a charm. And I never really thought anything of it until I started being led to look into the braukery. And I actually found that talking the fire out was an aspect of one of the powwow doctrines, one of the powwow charms from the old Pennsylvania Dutch powwow healers. And so being that it is a form of folk magic, even though the center of it is really around healing, I kind of think of it as sort of a cousin to root work. And both root work and braukery have some elements that tie very much into spiritualism, which I consider myself a spiritualist also.
Wow. It sounds pretty exciting. It sounds like, you know, it's really like creating new pathways that you're allowing yourself to explore. Because I think that's the hard part. You know, when people don't really know that I do, like, you know, fairy tradition witchcraft, you know, and it's like they hear, oh, witchcraft. It took me a while to really hone that word, you know, witch, you know, and
right.
Because because when you put that on you, it's like you're putting yourself in this like other category, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it can be terrifying to those of us who've been just like intuitive or psychic or medium for so long. You know, but these things have always been there. It's just now we're allowing ourselves to bring them forward. How do you see this road continuing to develop? Do you see it, becoming something that becomes the majority of your work, or is it just something else that you'll balance in with everything else that you're doing? Or how do you feel this is going to continue to open up for you?
I do think that there's going to be an integration to where it sort of permeates the bulk of what I do. And, you mentioned taking the quantum regression or the hypnosis training. And I think it is so important to keep investing back in ourselves as practitioners, because, we never will want to become stale. And, of course, we as people grow and evolve, and our clients, their needs grow and evolve. And, someday, right now, and for the past several years, psychics and mediums and healers have been extremely popular, and it's only growing. But in the same vein, so many people are developing themselves that we may get to a point where people like us aren't maybe necessarily as needed. And so I do think it's important to have other knowledge, other practices, other services that we can offer to be of service. But, to really answer your question, I do think that there's going to be some integration. And what I think it may lead to, or is leading to right now, is one of the things that we discussed when we were talking about maybe what we want to talk about for this show, which is my deepening into the spiritualist tradition has really led me into some interesting intersections with physical phenomena, a physical mediumship, which
a lot of people have seen as maybe dead or a very near dead art, but I actually think that it's going to be making a comeback in a very different sort of way.
Right. Wow, that's awesome. So, you know, let's kind of segue into that. That was a nice segue. Well, let's continue on that stream. So physical mediumship, because you know we've talked about mediumship on the show before, and I think people have, you know, they see like Teresa Caputo, and you know, it's what we would consider, I guess, mental mediumship, where we're receiving these telepathic messages, and sometimes doing a bit of channeling in that space. But physical mediumship is like a whole other ball game. It's like Can you just tell people a little bit about what physical mediumship is for those people who may not know, like, what that is?
Absolutely. You know, once upon a time, physical mediumship was incredibly popular and pretty common. You know, of course, the spiritualist movement started in around the 1850s, and especially around the turn of the century and even into the 20s and 30s was incredibly popular. But what we saw a lot of back then was the physical side of mediumship. So yes, there were people still doing the John Edward and the Teresa Caputo thing of giving messages from people that have passed. But especially at that time, there was a lot going on with psychic research. And, you know, because mental mediumship is mostly subjective, physical mediumship was the only thing that could be tried and tested and studied in an objective way. So, you know, we think of mental mediumship as the medium or the sensitive receiving impressions from the spirit world and passing on evidence and communications from those that have passed, you know, proving the continuity of life. And physical mediumship is sort of the medium themselves is simply acting as a catalyst for spirit to manifest in physical ways that can be objectively, tangibly observed. So, for example, table tipping was a very popular form of physical mediumship, albeit kind of a primitive form of physical mediumship, but table tipping was very popular. A lot of people saw it as a parlor game. A lot of what we saw in the spiritualist camps were there was some trance, although some people would argue that that's more mental than physical. But what we saw a lot of was trumpet mediumship, which was a part of direct voice or independent voice, and things like etherealization or materialization. Literally, as the medium would go into trance in seance room, ectoplasm would be drawn from the mediums or the sitters, and spirits would literally be able to manifest in either luminous apparitions or in physical, tangible, solid ways that the sitters would be able to touch and interact with and have communication with, amongst other things like lights and aports, which is the appearing of objects seemingly out of midair. And there's a whole host of other things, from slate writing to spirit cards and scotography, many, many different ways in which it was expressed. But it was, you know, something that everyone could see, everyone could touch, and everyone could interact with, and it wasn't, you know, subjectively going on within the mind of the medium.
So what started you moving in this direction? Because it sounds like it's a fairly intensive practice. So what, I mean, what segued you from doing more of the mental mediumship into gaining interest in physical mediumship?
I think a lot of it started back before I even knew that I was going to have an interest in physical mediumship. When I used to work missing persons back in like 08, 09, and 10, the mentor that I had, she was actually my introduction into the practice and the religion of spiritualism. She grew up in a spiritualist church. Her parents, her grandparents were members and practicing mediums in the spiritualist church. And she is, to this day, a fantastic trance medium. And so she was kind of not only my introduction to spiritualism, but she was my introduction to trance work, which I don't do as often, maybe once or twice a year, but it is something that sort of practice. Under certain circumstances, and that I think was what kind of piqued my interest a little bit in physical mediumship, and it never really went too much beyond that. And as I learned more about spiritualism, as I started visiting the spiritualist communities like Lilydale and Camp Chesterfield, and learning more about the physical mediums of that time, especially more so in Chesterfield than Lilydale, because Lilydale kind of frowns these days upon physical mediumship. But I found some really fascinating things. One of the instances that stands out to me the most was last July, I was teaching a workshop at Camp Chesterfield, and there Chesterfield has a really wonderful museum dedicated to not only the camp, but spiritualism in general. And a lot of the part of their museum, there's an art gallery. And the majority of the pictures in the art gallery are what's called precipitated spirit art. So a lot of us today are familiar with spirit artists who will either draw your deceased loved ones or draw likenesses of spirit guides and things of that nature. But precipitated spirit art was actually not so much done by the medium, but the medium was the catalyst for spirit to do the painting themselves. So the two most famous spirit artists probably that there's ever been were May and Lizzie Bang. They were called the Bang Sisters. And they would do the sittings, sometimes in broad daylight or in front of auditoriums with hundreds of people, where they would set up a canvas between them, and they would sit on either side, and they would simply sit. And, of course, you know, back in that day, to build up physical mediumship sometimes required sitting in development circles for years and years. But as they would sit, and sometimes even just conversing and not even being in, you know, trance stage or anything like that, images would start to appear on these canvases. And the really interesting thing about this is if you look at any of the Bang Sisters' works, they look almost like oil paintings. But if you observe them, there's no brush strokes. And when scientists have studied these paintings, they have found that they aren't painted at all, but that the material that the pigmentation is used as, the only thing that they can find that is similar to it is the that's on butterfly wings. It's not a paint. It's not an oil.
Oh, wow.
It's dusty powder. And so then that kind of really got my interest going again in physical mediumship. Mm. And last September, I believe it was, this past September, I had the amazing opportunity to sit in on a physical phenomena circle. And what I witnessed kind of blew my mind in a way that I didn't think could happen.
Wow. So what happened? You can't, like, leave us hanging there.
Yeah. No, it's to this day, I honestly can say not a day goes by where I don't think about what happened in those two seances. So when I was at Chesterfield, I very fortunately got to know a man who had been a part of the Chesterfield community, had been a resident medium for years and years. And after my workshop, we went out and talked, and we talked a lot about spiritualism and how it's dying and, you know, different political things that have been taking place in the camps. And I think the thing that sort of created that friendship is we both have this desire to see changes take place so it doesn't die out. And then the younger generations keep the tradition going. And he shared with me that, you know, a group of his students had been sitting to develop physical phenomena, and this group had been sitting for about 5 years, and he was going to talk to them and see if I could sit in. And so it ended up happening a couple months ago. I was doing some workshops in the Detroit area, and so I got the opportunity to go and sit. And I kind of knew from what they spoke of what to expect. And they worked with trumpet mediumship. So the idea is that you work with a tool known as the spirit trumpet, which, if anyone is unfamiliar, a spirit trumpet is not like a musical instrument. It's basically kind of like this aluminum megaphone. Most of them are kind of collapsible, so they're easily transported. And what happens is, as you go into circle or as you sit in seance together, spirit will utilize the trumpets and draw etheric substance or ectoplasm from the sitters or the medium to form sort of this artificial voice box inside the trumpet to where their voices can physically speak through the trumpet. So I was like, okay, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with weird shit. I'm down. And so we get there. And before we go, the host family that I was staying with, the guy who was one of the regular sitters, we went out to dinner. And there was this funny little thing that happened with the waitress. And so I didn't think anything of it, of course. Go to the circle. We're sitting. There's a little seance room in the woman's basement. And there's chairs set up and everyone has their trumpet. And I had my trumpet that I'd never used before. So I brought my trumpet and all the trumpets are in the center of the room. And, of course, it starts like any other sort of circle or regular meeting for people who sit for development, a prayer, an invocation, things like that. But then the lights go out and you are locked in the room. It's pitch black so that the phenomena can manifest. And it's, you know, as people who do this work, I always say, you know, things like ghosts and stuff like that don't scare me, but sitting in a completely black room, you know, so black that you can't see your hand in front of your face, kind of is unnerving a little bit at first. But I felt comfortable with the people who sat. I felt confident in them and that they'd been doing this for a long time. So a lot of what it entailed is building the energy so spirit can manifest. So there's a lot of singing. So if you've never sat in on like a spiritualist circle or a spiritualist seance, they like to sing. So there was, you know, singing, and then ask if spirit's there, and you sing some more, and you sing some more. So about 20 minutes into it, you start to hear the trumpets sliding across the floor. And everyone's speaking and talking, so you know that everyone is still sitting in their chair. There's no other doors in or out. The door is locked. There's, you know, so I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. That's kind of weird. And then we sang some more, and then all of a sudden there's tapping on the trumpet. And then there's blowing noises, like wind noises coming from the trumpet. So after a little bit more of getting the energy up, all of a sudden there's these voices appearing out of the middle of the air. And the voices are moving around the room. They're coming from the ceiling. They're coming around the floor. The trumpets are literally up in the air and moving around the room. And the trumpet, one of the first communicators to come through was a guide of one of the regular sitters. And he's coming over and he's talking to me. And at first, the voices are kind of weak because the energy link hasn't been sustained for a very long time. And it sounded a little creepy. So when you're in a pitch black room and you hear this really soft, raspy voice coming out of a trumpet levitating in front of your face, there's this moment of like, do I bolt for the door or do I sit here and listen to what they have to say? And then my mind was kind of blown because, you know, after a while, the energy built up some more and you're literally carrying on conversations with these dead people just as easily as I am with you. I mean, it's literally a telephone to the other side.
Right.
And so two things that started the session that no one else could have known that kind of blew my mind was that, one, I just moved into a new house, and earlier, a couple of days before I left for that experience, I came home one night and my stove was on, and it was not on when I left. The burner was going. You know, I wasn't happy about that. I kind of was freaking out because I had a roll of paper towel sitting next to the stove, and I thought, oh, my God, the house could have caught on fire. So one of the first things that Spirit asked me through the trumpet is if I'm adjusting to my new home, you know, and they're talking about how they're working on the energy of the new home and trying to get it just right. And I said, okay, well, wait a minute. Do you know who turned the stove on? And they told me a couple things, and then the voice says, well, don't worry, we made sure that the paper towel didn't catch fire. And my jaw, like, hit the floor because nobody knew that. And and then one of the other communicators was telling us verbatim some of the things that the waitress was telling us or talking to us about during dinner before we actually went to circle. And no one else would have known that. And I know that the only other person that would have known that was that sitter that I went to dinner with. But being that he was talking at the same time as the voice and the trumpet was coming out, I knew that it couldn't have been him, like, throwing his voice or anything like that. And pretty shortly after that, many different communicators started coming through. When we would sing, they would sing through the trumpet with us. The lights were manifesting and moving around the room. And at one point, it even sounded as if someone was walking around the circle, clacking like stones or crystals around us. And they were talking about how it was balancing our bodies and energy so that we could have a stronger link. And at the end of it, I was just shocked. I didn't know what to make of it. My mind was blown. I had read about things like that, but to read about it and to experience it firsthand were very different. And that was my introduction. And luckily that weekend, I actually got to sit a second time, and we had some very similar phenomena. So as I mentioned, I just got a new house, and now I actually have created one room for myself as the sitting room or as the seance room. So I'm putting it out there that the right sitters come to me, and I'm really going to put a lot of effort for this next year in developing the physical side of my mediumship.
That sounds pretty fascinating. Like, how do you want that to manifest for yourself? Do you want to do the trumpeting, or do you want to do something different? Are you not sure yet?
You know, I'm open to wherever it goes. I really liked the trumpet. And I think that's what I'm going to focus on first. So I already found a sitter who, he's a good medium. We've done some classes together, and he's willing to make the dedication. Because one thing I don't think a lot of people realize is that it's not just as simple as getting a bunch of people together and singing and then waiting. Sometimes it takes years to build up the right rapport with spirit for the physical phenomena to happen. So the insight that I've gotten from my own guides is I have two male sitters. And I have a suspicion that pretty soon within the new year that two females are going to come as a way of sort of balancing that energy. And we'll just see what happens. You know, I really want the people who are willing to meet and dedicate one night a week to do this, because it's something that you have to be consistent with, you know. And even with my mental mediumship circle, you know, I've been sitting with the same group of people for about 2 years. But I ask them, you know, one night a week is all I ask of you. So like my mental mediumship circle, every Tuesday night at 6 o'clock, we've been meeting for the past two and a half years. And so I want someone who's going to want to be here. I want someone who's not, you know, that they want to be here more than anything else each week and build up that energy and see the results, because it does take a lot of work.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't think people understand, like, the work that goes, like, when I was doing, like, full-on channeling and doing, you know, letting my guides come into the body completely and stuff, it takes a lot. And it takes a lot, you know, it's not just me. There was a team of people who would help, you know, to have people holding the space for me so that I could go into that space safely and come out of it safely. And I think, you know, when people talk about wanting to do that work, I don't think sometimes they realize how much really goes into the physical side of when you're really getting into this, the deeper aspects of what we can do, you know, with it. But I think it's fun that you're exploring that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people, like you said, I don't think people realize how much goes into it, especially the physical side of it. And I think that part of the reason that it's maybe not been as popular, or some people have even speculated that it's gone, or, you know, that the physical mediumship is sort of an extinct practice, is because I think there are physical repercussions that can come about from developing it improperly. And I think a lot of it, too, has been an energetic thing with humanity. You know, we have so many toxins and all this stuff with food and diet and stuff, and I don't think the energy's been right for it. But like I said, I have a suspicion that it's going to come back and start to become popular again.
Right. It seems like everything old is new again. And I think it's important, like, you know, I'm all down for that. So I just don't want ectoplasm come out of me, like, in any, you know, I've told my guys, like, we can do channeling, you can come in and walk around, but we're not, like, spitting ectoplasm out. Don't pull nothing out of my ears. My orifices are not yours to use, except for my mouth, and only for words.
Well, it was really funny, too, because when I was sitting, being that I had no experience with it prior to that, they said, you know, that spirit will draw ectoplasm from the body. And, of course, you think of all the old pictures and the books as like the cheesecloth coming out of people's nose and ears and stuff like that. But he said, you know, majority of time, at least in their circle, it was drawn from the solar plexus of the medium. And it was really kind of cool and kind of funny at the same time is when we were all sitting, you could actually feel it. It feels almost like a pulling sensation in your stomach, and everyone's stomach started growling at the same time. And I guess that was a very common experience for them. The spirit started to draw from them.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, though. Like, and I've seen some pretty wild things. And you know, it's like you see people like Esther Hicks and these channels and these people that are who are doing this like big type stuff. But I've had more profound experiences in like really small groups where like, you know, like it's not something that's made up because it's such a small group of people. Like, you know, and it's like you see something like on a big scale, sometimes disbelief and can take over. But when you're in an intimate setting and you're witnessing something like you witnessed with the trumpet, it's harder to dismiss that as something that's like just in your mind or somebody manipulating the space.
Right. Even after the session, I was like looking, you know, because like after a while, the energy dissipates, you turn the lights on, we ate a little bit to ground ourselves. And I'm like looking around the room. I'm like, are there speakers? Are there trap doors? Like I could not find anything.
Right. So I think, you know, those of us who do this work, we're also healthy skeptics of, no, those who do this work. Because I think, you know, we have to be because there's so many different traps that we can fall into as practitioners. So when like we try and there's no way to like discount what it is that we're seeing, I think it does have a profound impact on us. It's great that you're going in that direction. I think that's going to be neat to see what comes of that for you.
Yeah, and I think too it came at such a timely period because in doing what we do, sometimes this thing that seems phenomenal or amazing to other people, because we practice it on such a regular basis, can kind of just become monotonous to us. And
right.
I was kind of in that staleness. I was kind of in that funk of like, there's got to be something more. There's got to be something different. I'm ready for something new. And it really just reignited that passion that I had, you know, when I first got into this work as a teen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really necessary.
Right. But I think, you know, we're afraid of phenomena sometimes, I think. You know, when I'm doing the regressive hypnotherapy on someone now, and one of the things I like about Dolores Cannon's technique is that you actually get to have direct experience with your soul, your higher consciousness. And I hear that voice in my head, and people hear that voice when I'm relaying it to them. But it's different for me when I have someone who's completely knocked out and trance, and I hear this very familiar voice come out of their mouth, and that voice recognizes parts of me that this person doesn't know. You know, it's like I can't deny it. You know, this person,
right?
they're knocked out. There's no way. Like, you know, so it's like I think sometimes we need the phenomena, but I think too, like especially with what you're doing, I think it's important for us to preserve these things because if we don't preserve them and don't continue to explore them and expand them, they will just kind of vanish into the background.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. You know, it's like with the root work, you know, a big part of,
right. Yeah,
we work with roots and stuff, but the biggest thing is your root, your spirit, and your ancestors. And I think the same thing is important for us that do, you know, clairvoyance or mediumship or healing is these are our roots. This is the ancestry of it, and that's something that I want to honor and pay my respects to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think, you know, for me, even claiming the word witch as part of who I am, it emboldens everything else that I do because it's a place where magic also exists. And sometimes I think we tend to hold on, or I've noticed people who tend to hold on to their labels with the exclusion of everything else. You know, like Teresa, I love her, but she has this whole idea that the darkness doesn't exist at all, you know? And we hold on to this label of light worker, you know? But I think, you know, when we realize, like, there are these other beautiful realms we can tap into, And I see someone like you doing it so authentically because, you know, it's transforming you as well. So what have you noticed as a transformation in yourself as you've gone through these different dimensions of practice? Like, what are you noticing changing within you as Travis, the individual? Like, what's changing for you personally in doing this work?
Really, within the past few months, I've noticed that part of what I think the work through Spirit is proving to me is that I'm much more capable of dealing with things, both on a spiritual level, but also even just in my everyday life, human experience, existence, much more capable of handling and dealing with things than I think I gave myself credit for. And that, I think, has been pretty empowering because, you know, I always make the joke, like, I need an adult. And they're like, yeah, you are an adult. Well, I need an older adult, an adultier adult. But I do see a maturing thing taking place both personally and professionally. And, you know, I am finding that there's more of an integration of these different aspects of what I like to do and these different practices coming together in that way. And I also feel like more than ever, healing is, because of course anytime we do spirit work, healing is going to be at the core, but I really have found that the more and more that I go seemingly outward into strange and unusual territories, it keeps taking me closer and closer to healing and the importance of healing being placed on things. So I've noticed for me personally, one of my lessons that's kind of come up in my face right now, because I'm an avoider and I'm a stuffer. So if I don't want to deal with something, I pretend that it doesn't exist or I don't talk about it. So right. I'm noticing that for me, everything lately in my life, good or bad, is so much more in my face. And it's like that contrast is so much more extreme, really forcing me to kind of step in and say, okay, I didn't like this before, but now it's, you know, as to where I could ignore it or stuff it down, it's really, really in my face, and I really have to just step into my power and get uncomfortable and do something about it.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense. And I think, too,
and it's not always fun.
I think that's the best part of it, though, is I think for me, what I've noticed in my friends that are practitioners, the ones that are the most true to the work are the ones that are also able to show their scars because of the work. You know, this work can be very jarring, and it can be very destructive in very beautiful ways. Brutally beautiful. And I'm finding, like, the more I go into it and the more I do these other things, I'm losing words to wrap around what it is that I do. Like, I don't really know what I do anymore. I think, you know, I do healing. I was talking to someone earlier, and I told them, you know, basically when someone asked me what I do, I just say, I love you for an hour. Like, I just hold you in love for the hour we're together, and whatever is going to happen is going to happen.
and I just love you. Yeah. Well, and I think, too, like, I know we've talked before about similar things, but I find myself lately becoming more comfortable with the paradox of, you know, as spiritual people, we are, and we've talked about how, you know, there's light and dark and balance is so important, but it's like I'm more comfortable in the paradox of that, to where, like, yes, like, I love you and I see the beauty in you, and yet I can fucking hate your guts at the same time, and it's okay.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, I prefer the word shadow worker instead of, like, light worker. Although I do, like, I step back and forth between different labels, I think. So sometimes it's nice to put one on and try on the coat for a while to see how it still feels.
Right.
You know? But I'm finding, like, that there are these beautiful places of paradox that we can rest and sit, because those are the places that create the most growth. Like, you know, looking at where your hoodoo practice intersects with your practice of, you know, mediumship, or how it may inform your work within physical mediumship. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see, like, how this all starts to commingle. Are you going to be doing any more advanced training with Starcasus, or are you going to pursue just the physical mediumship now? Or
there is, so we're finishing up the last module for this first kind of phase of it, and there she's going to do a an advanced practitioner course at some point. There's going to be a little break, so I imagine it's probably going to be somewhere around summer, and I do intend on that. But like, one thing that I like to do is every year I like to take some sort of course for myself. So like last year I did a workshop at Lilydale, and then there was, you know, taking a workshop on accessing the Akashic Records. Like, I always like to do at least one class or one course a year just for my own learning and just for my own enjoyment, just to take and learn and be in the student chair. And I do plan on, in February, there's a an intensive going on at Camp Chesterfield. So I do plan on attending that. And I have been looking at their what's the word that I'm looking for? It's their educational program. Usually it goes for like the ordination, they call it like seminary week. And so like, I am not personally interested in being ordained or being any sort of minister, but I am looking at several of the courses that really interest me, and some of them do lend itself to the physical mediumship. So yeah, I do have, you know, plans to take my education further and hopefully, you know, get to sit with that group again. And really, just like I said, putting it out there for the right people to come along so I can start working on building this up.
It's pretty awesome. It sounds like you have, like, a lot of things that are opening up for you. And that's always great to see. I think, you know, it's wonderful when you see someone who's actively working on themselves, but also, like, taking on the work. Because I think that's the hard part sometimes, is actually figuring out how to use these tools and not just letting them collect dust on the shelf.
Right.
And speaking of dust on the shelf, another segue here. We're getting to the end of the year and we're in kind of the dark months and stuff. And something else we talked about chatting a bit about here is cleansing. Because this is such a great time of the year to do healing work or to dust off things. I don't do spring cleaning in spring. I always do my spring cleaning in winter because I think it's just a better time for it. Talk a little bit about what cleansing is to you and what that means to you, and what are your processes for spiritual cleansing?
So cleansing is kind of like my, it's my savior, because between doing the readings and interacting with all kinds of different people and working out of a metaphysical shop where I interact with all kinds of different people, sometimes a little crazier than others. You know, I always sort of feel like taking on a little bit of this or taking on a little bit of that. So for my own sanity, you know, I do both personal practices for cleansing as well as my home, because I'm OCD in general, but I'm like energetically OCD about the energy of my living space. So I do a lot of cleansing work a lot of the time, a lot of maintenance. And so for me, it's simply getting things back to sort of like a clean slate or a neutral energy to be worked with that I can kind of imprint my own upon. So for me personally, like when I'm cleansing my body, sometimes I'll just wipe myself down. Well, I guess I'll start too with like the readings. You know, when I read for a person, I scribble on a pen and paper. And I noticed that, you know, a lot of times, especially the older that I get, I tend not to have the stamina that I used to have when I was 16 doing readings versus now doing readings. And I realized I was holding on to a lot of the client's issues, you know, coming home and being sick or having a headache and all these different things. And so there's little mini things that I do. Like before sessions, I will wash my hands. And when I'm done with that reading for that person, I take that piece of paper with their scribbles and automatic writing and everything on it, and I rip it up as a way of symbolically releasing them. And not that I advocate smoking or tobacco, but for me personally, I oftentimes will smoke in between sessions. and for me, I find that to be like a clearing little ritual of my own. But then when I come home that night, I always say take your psychic showers. And I know a lot of people talk about like cleansing visualization in the shower and stuff like that. But for me, literally, I tend to notice that there are two places that my body holds energy or that my body is very susceptible to energy. And that's the back of my neck at the base of my skull and the bottoms of my feet. So after I get home, I always say I'm going to go wash my clients off. I take a shower and I spend extra time washing the back of my neck and the very bottoms of my feet in between each toe. Why, I have no idea, but that's just what I've noticed. And so until I do that, I kind of feel like I'm holding other people's stuff. And then I'll usually dress myself with some sort of a spiritual oil or something like that. But that cleansing process is really important but for me. But a lot of it too, you know, whenever you put yourself out publicly, and I'm sure that you've noticed this too, there are people who may not like you or really like you too much. And I do think that energetically they can influence you or your, you know, your quote unquote luck or different things like that. And so I cleanse my home regularly. And I, like, for example, when I first moved into this house, I really, even though the energy of the home felt good, I didn't want any residual stuff from the previous tenants. So the first thing that I did before I even started moving anything in was I started wiping all the surfaces down with white vinegar. I started putting salts in the corners. I made different washes for the floors, using different herbs and things like that, tinctures and whatnot, wiping down the walls with those same washes. Even something like putting coffee grounds around the carpet and letting that sit are just one of many things that I do to cleanse. Because most people want to revert to smudging, which is great. It's fantastic. It's fine. But I've tended to notice that smudging is sort of like a, it's like a surface cleaning. It's kind of like, you know, someone calls you and says they're coming over. So you run around the house, you run the vacuum quick, and you, you know, neatly organize that pile of magazines that was all over the place. So you've got like the surface clean. But I like to get down to like the floorboards and the walls and all these different things that you don't think about, like how, you know, disorganization under your bed can affect your relationship and all sorts of stuff like that.
It's true. I think it's true. I tell my clients too, because I think some of them, you know, they like to get their readings. They like the informational parts of what we do, but cleansing is an action step. It's something that, you know, when you're doing something, you're empowering yourself in that place of change and transition and growth. I think we too often forget the action step. We get the information, but we have to put information into action. So I think it's often a missing step.
To speak to that point too, you know, I used to do, not a ton, but I used to go to people's homes where they would either want it to be, you know, cleansed or blessed or cleared or whatever. And I have found that since then, I don't really do a lot of that. But if I do any of that work, I will usually go in and sort of feel what I may feel from a home, but then I instruct or guide the other person through the process themselves. And when they take on the task themselves rather than just paying someone to do it for them, it seems so much more effective because they're participating in the process.
Right. It's lasting that way too. And plus, I don't want to have to keep coming back to your house to clean it for you. I'm not, you know, like
right.
a Molly maid service, you know,
right.
like, yeah, and I find that when people can do it themselves and realize they can do it, it's so much more effective, I think, because, you know, it empowers you. It makes you feel like you're out and you feel like the house is now cleansed and discharged with that energy. You feel as if you've done something, and that can be pretty powerful.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And cleansing can be easy. It doesn't have to be, because I've seen some pretty complex cleaning rituals, like to walk around a hole like 20 times and like dump the water a certain way. And it's like, It could just be simply just walking around your space with an open heart saying, I love you, to your house. It can be something simple or it can be complex. What would you recommend for someone who may just be looking to do, like we'll start first with like a gentle space cleansing. Like what would you recommend someone doing that could be a simple practice to begin now?
Well, like the simple thing, I think, before I even get into like the energetic aspects of it, I always tell people, you know, the physical cleanliness and orderliness of your home is often a mirror of your emotional state or your mental state. And so before I'd even go about doing any sort of a spiritual cleansing, just physically cleansing is you know, a great way to break up stagnant energies. And just, like I said, it's often a reflection of where you're at internally. But if it was just something quick or light or for like maintenance, you know, I know I mentioned smudging, but that is something that most people nowadays are familiar with and is just a very quick and easy thing as like a maintenance tool. I personally, while I like smudging, I really like frankincense. I really like Palo Santo, just something a little different, kind of has a little bit of a different energy. And I like that. The other thing too, you know, even if you just want to sort of maintain a certain atmosphere, diffusers are wonderful. Lemongrass is a really wonderful psychic cleanser. I like to experiment with different things. Like recently, I had some sort of bug that was going around. So I started working with juniper and smudging with juniper and just playing around and seeing the different vibrations or the different qualities that different things had. And I found that I really liked working with juniper and I really liked working with cedar. For me too, like I said, if you're really feeling like there's some stagnant energies in your home, energy likes to collect in corners and places that we don't interact with as much. So like I said, coffee grounds are really wonderful to lay down and let them sit for a few hours and then vacuum them up. And I like to work a lot with lemon. So when I talk about like spiritual baths or cleansings for the self, I always tell people, you know, one of the quickest baths that you can do to soak in to kind of strip away any residual or clingy energies is, you know, your salt, a cup of black coffee, and a tablespoon of lemon juice in the bathtub. That's incredibly cleansing. And when I was younger, I used to do some stuff with this paranormal investigation group. And I remember one time they were doing a talk at this college, and they had this little like pamphlet they made to pass out to people. And of course, I just showed up and did my thing. I wasn't really into like the gadgets and the gizmos and stuff, but I was looking at the pamphlet and I read something on there that made me like really embarrassed because it sounded so stupid. Was that ghosts like lemons? And I was like, what the hell is this about ghosts liking lemons? So I started, you know, like that always bothered me. And I was like, where the hell did that come from? So as I delved into spiritualism, I found that oftentimes lemon was used in the seance room because it's a very high vibration. So it wasn't that ghost-like lemons, but it would be used to raise the vibration of the atmosphere so that they could more clearly connect to spirit. And if you think about a lot of the cleaning products that we have today, most of them have lemon or are lemon-scented because somewhere in the back of our minds, we have this intuitive understanding that lemon is incredibly cleansing.
Wow. That's pretty neat to think about, yeah. Wow. Holy smokes. So what would you recommend? Like, you know, we're coming to the dark phases of the year. Is there a particular ritual you would recommend for someone who may want to, or even a practice to begin for someone who may want to open up to their spiritual gifts a bit more? Someone who may be wanting to access their healing or, just whatever comes to mind. Like, what would you recommend? Like, anything specific, like, for this time of the year?
As far as a practice or, like, a working?
Yeah. A practice or a working, whatever you feel. Whatever you intuitively feel those listening may need.
Okay.
There is, well, winter in itself is, as much as I hate the cold, is kind of one of the areas of the year that I like because it has that quality of hibernation and going within and reflection. And, you know, it kind of reminded me of something that I read in a book by Orion Foxwood. I think it's like The Flame in the Cauldron or The Cauldron in the Flame. It was one of his newer books. And, of course, he was writing it from the perspective of witchery, but I think that the same thing could be applied to, you know, healers, diviners, readers, intuitives, whatever. But he was talking about the concept of the witch blood and that desire to claim magic or be that as the witch blood, and how sometimes the potential for it exists within everyone, but sometimes when people who are meant for it or have, I guess, maybe a greater disposition for it, encounter other people who claim or own that title, it awakens something up, it awakens something within them. And so I think, too, you know, even if you're interested in healing or psychic ability or mediumship, sometimes just, you know, being in the presence of someone doing it, practicing it, living it, walking it, is going to sort of ignite something within you. Sort of just by association, seeing an action, seeing someone who lives it. So if there is something that does interest you, explore, you know, go to a group reading, go get a healing session, go, you know, have a counseling session or whatever, and just sort of be in the energy of someone who's living that and doing that and breathing that and owning it. But as far as the working goes, and I wish that I remembered the passage off the top of my head, but you could easily find it by typing in the words. But there's a particular verse in the Bible that, of course, in Hoodoo, we work a lot with the Bible and the Psalms and stuff like that, if that's your particular bent in how you practice. But there is a verse that always stuck with me about how old men will dream dreams and young men will prophesy, and it basically talks about the awakening of spiritual gifts. I think it's somewhere in Corinthians. Mm-hmm. And I've used that that verse or that passage in different works for really helping me to step more fully into my practice or my abilities. One of the things that I did, and this is a really fun thing too, if you like the root work or if you like the conjure, I like working with oil lamps, because you can load the base with all your ingredients and intentions and then put your fire to it, put your intention to it. So I took that particular verse and I dressed it with oil. And then because my focus was my mediumship, my intuition, in the base of my lamp, I loaded it with some frankincense, some calamus, some master of the woods, myrrh and mugwort and wormwood, herbs that were associated to me with maybe like funerary rites or traditional like death herbs and
right.
herbs associated with the high vibration or intuition like star anise and stuff like that, combined with that particular verse. And I pinned the verse itself to the wick. And I would burn that as just sort of like a reminder of my own power, that it's there, that we all have access to those gifts. So that was like one work that I did for myself that is easy to do. You can adapt it and suit it to your own needs and intentions. But, you know, any sort of work, whether you're approaching it from a conjure perspective or a pagan perspective or just a New Ager perspective, you know, working with fire, candles, seems to be something that everyone can relate to. And so that will always lead you to something else. I think it's accessible. There's just something that's very primitive about the spirit of the flame. So that's always a great place.
It's pretty powerful. That's really good stuff. I think sometimes just doing something. You know, I think sometimes there's a fear of like starting, because we know when, once we start, what will change. Because change will happen once you begin the journey. So here's another question that kind of popped in my head. It's kind of like more of a tangential thing. But I it's not a question that I've asked very often, but it's one that I do like to ask when I do get the chance. So this is also time of year people tend to get more sessions, because we're getting into that time of the year where New Year's is right around the corner. So people start looking for things to come. So what would you recommend for people, like, you know, what do you think are the tips you want to give someone that they can take on in order to get a good reading? Like, how should you approach getting a session with someone? Like, what do you tell your clients, or would you recommend just in general? Because I think it's not something we talk about very often. Like, we hear about, like, in our work, how we should give readings. This is, like, the way we should do the work. But how do you recommend people approach receiving anyone else?
You know, I always say that it's wonderful to have credentials and flashy websites and things that you can add to your name as far as your list of accomplishments. But I always tell people, more than anything else, when you're looking for a legitimate reader, go by word of mouth. Go by someone who's had an experience with them, because there's a lot of people, and there's a lot of well-known people that have a lot of credentials, and it doesn't mean shit, really, as far as, you know, them backing it up with either their integrity or the level of the ability that they work at. And it's really frustrating sometimes, too, seeing people who maybe aren't as, not that it's about talent so much as integrity, but who maybe aren't as qualified to be doing what they're doing, getting exorbitant amounts of money versus the, you know, the $30 reader at the psychic fair who is fantastic. So I say it doesn't matter to me if you're paying $30 or $300, you know, really go by word of mouth, find someone, you know, that people have had experiences with that you think is credible. But also too, I always say, you know, go with your own instincts. You know, when you go to a person's website that you're looking at maybe getting a reading with, because most people do it via the internet nowadays, you know, don't just take their biography for at heart. Really discern, what do you feel? You know, when you look at this person's picture, how does that make you feel in your body? How does that make you feel emotionally? You know, does your stomach tighten up? Do you feel good about that? And take your time with it. You know, your life isn't going to fall apart if you don't get that reading that week. Really make sure that you're feeling comfortable with who you go in with. And the other thing I always encourage, and I think it's funny, and it may be a bit of a tell with people who discourage this, but I always encourage my clients to record their sessions or take extensive notes, because I want them to remember and I want them to be able to refer back. And I've seen some people who don't like that for some reason. And it's great now because, you know, with smartphones, most people have the voice memo app right on their phone, so it can just be with them all the time. But definitely record it and be very aware of it. And you can refer back to it, of course, keeping in mind that things can shift and change. But for the most part, you know, you should be able to see truth in what that person said to you.
Right. Yeah, and I think we'll also approach it like we're humans, you know. So we're human. We don't always have great days, and some days we don't want to hear what you have to say. So be gentle with us, you know. If you want us to be gentle with you, be gentle with us, you know.
Right.
Because if you approach with attitude, you know, I may give you a free reading, but it may not be the reading you expected to receive.
He's going to read you in a whole different way.
Exactly. which I think, you know, it's important, because I think, you know, that's part of it. You know, I personally don't ever want to be put on a pedestal, because I enjoy this work too much to be on a pedestal. I'd rather be in the trenches with everybody else, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's no fun, too, like, being put up there. I don't know, it just, I guess in some ways I can see the appeal, but at the end of the day, it kind of feels gross. Like, and I know that I'm sure you get this, too. And I see this with a lot of male readers. I know female readers will get this too, but you get groupy sometimes, and that's just kind of like a gross feeling to me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, and I look at someone like Esther Hicks, and she has Abraham, and she has these like massive gatherings of people. I often wonder how Esther feels, because they're not really there to see Esther. They're there to see Abraham, you know? And I think when you're on that pedestal for so long, it's like they're not really there for you. They're there for what you're connected to. And you start to lose a bit of who you are in that space. So I think that's why I always appreciate, you know, like yourself, people, when we're working on ourselves, we're not like, you know, yes, I'm facilitating this beautiful thing that's up here, but I'm also listening to it myself. And I'm also doing the work on myself. And I'm also human just like you, which I think for my clients, they see that I'm human. It means they can do it too.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Because you look at someone like Esther, who's talking about law of attraction. Of course, it's working for her because she has all these like these powerful things happening with her. But I often wonder what Esther has to say. You know, I always want to go up and like be that person that says, "I want Abraham to leave for a minute. I just want to talk to Esther."
I would love to see.
You know, because I always think, yeah. I always wonder what when you're on a pedestal like that, it's you know, and I've had people try to put me up there, and I'm the person that will always, whatever your expectation is, I'm going to go in the opposite direction of it, which is, you know, it's just how it's going to go. But
right.
For you, like, what's the, you know, because we all have our areas that we really love to work in. I don't really like, I'm really good at the relation questions, but I don't like doing them. But I'm pretty good at them, so I always do them. But what's, like, your area that you love, and then what's the area that, you know, you're not as enthused about when people come to you for? Like, what's the stuff you love doing? What's the stuff that just kind of, like, makes you roll your eyes sometimes when you hear it?
You know, I really love, I'll say this. I think that the easiest thing for me is working from the psychic level, and at this point, I don't mean this in a way that's like arrogant, but it's like, I don't really have to try. It's not work to work from a psychic level. The area that I love the most and am passionate about the most, but have to work harder at, is the mediumship aspect of things. You know, like, it's funny because most people would think it's opposite, but with mediumship, you give me a group, and I'm fine. You know, the bigger the group, the more comfortable I feel. You put me in a one-on-one setting in mediumship, and it's either on fire, clear as a bell, or it's just not there. So I really have to work for me, if I'm going into a session, of making sure that my energy is in a right place, that I am able to make a connection to bring through evidence for a person. And it's really frustrating sometimes, too, because, you know, just as a person, but also as someone who is out there and offering a certain service, it's really frustrating for me when some days, you know, I can have a session at 3 o'clock and someone, you know, wants to connect with certain loved ones and I'm bringing through everybody and the family dog, and then my session at 4 o'clock comes and I don't get anything as far as their dead people goes. And my ego has had to accept that as much as I want to be super medium and be able to connect for everyone, I guess I trust that there's a reason why sometimes it doesn't happen. And I want to connect for everyone, and I want to bring it through beautiful messages for everyone, but sometimes it just doesn't happen. So that's, I think, one area that I'm always working on perfecting and pushing further and being better at. But I really love when someone comes in and they just sit down and they're like, "I'm open. What do I need to hear?"
Right. I like that too. I like when they're just receptive. You know, they, especially like if I'm doing mediumship, and I had this one, and this is, I backed off mediumship for a while. I had this one session where they came in. I was providing validation after validation after validation, but she wanted me to tell her, like, what color the toenails were painted, like, on the 4th birthday of her best friend or something. It was like she wanted some really obscure little detail that just wasn't going to come, you know. And it was just so frustrating to have to sit there, you know. And give all this information and have someone be so non-receptive to to what's being received. You know, so it's nice when people do approach it with an openness to receive the information that's coming through. And yeah, like I channeled one time, this woman wanted to talk to her husband, and he said, no, he's not coming through. Like, I relayed that, and she just got completely pissed and was, like, blowing up, and he said, that's why I'm not coming through. Which was really interesting that they always give you what you need. It may not be what you want. You know,
exactly.
Don't shoot the messenger. Don't shoot the messenger.
Exactly.
So, you know, we're coming down to the end here. So is there anything else you want to talk about that we haven't touched on yet?
Oh, goodness.
Anything else that's stirring?
I recently started looking more thoroughly into theosophy. When we're talking about the physical phenomena seances, we got to sit twice that weekend. And the second sitting that we had different communicators and some familiar guides come through. But at the very end, before the energy died, the communicator asked if anyone wanted to come through. Or if there's anyone specific in spirit that one of the sitters wanted to talk to. And who ended up being the communicator at that point identified himself as Master Hilarion, who really made me excited because I had a reading probably 2 years ago, and I've always had sort of this, maybe a familiarity, but this resonance or this draw to Hilarion, even though I didn't know much about theosophy or different things like that. And in that reading, he was sort of identified in that session. And so when it came through in a very physical, tangible voice, it was very interesting. And, you know, so he addressed one of the sitters and talked about the importance of studying natural law. And then at the very end, and I always joke about, because I like to make fun of people who do what we do, so I always joke about, like, St. Germain is everyone's spirit guide. But at the very end of the session, the voice coming through the trumpet said, St. Germain is going to give everyone a blessing. And going around the circle, I started hearing all the, in a clockwise fashion, one sitter after the other would say thank you, and then a couple seconds would pass, and then the next person would say thank you, and I was like, what's going on here? Then you could feel something brushing over your shoulder, touching your head, going down the other shoulder, and then going on to the next person. So that really sort of ignited my interest in going back and learning about theosophy, which the first time in some younger years when I tried to look at it, I found it very hard to digest and very almost like cryptic, and just the way that they wrote back then was hard to comprehend. And it came in some other ways, through some other books that I didn't necessarily realize that I had. And then I found them, and they're talking about the seven rays of humanity and the different masters of the rays. So I've been learning about them, and I've also been studying more of natural law and hermetic philosophy, because I think it's really important. I think it's a lot of the groundwork for what we do. So having a firm understanding of that, to me, is important moving forward.
Right. Well, that's really interesting. That's like a whole another show that we could just do on. And I love Hilarion. Like, I just love his name. It's like,
right?
You know, this is Master Hilarion. And
I should be said in quotation.
Yeah. It's like, that's how I envision him, like, arriving, like, in a channeling session. You know, it's like.
Right.
It's like there's got to be one out there who does that. But I think that's really cool. I love the diversity in what you do, because I think that's how it should be. I think, you know, it helps us to explore, because the more we explore, the more we, you know, my motto is, if I'm not evolving as a teacher, I can't evolve you as a student or as a client. So it's always great to hear when someone's evolving themselves that way, because sometimes it may sound like what we're doing is very disjointed and disconnected, but it's really like combining everything through the exploration, I think. I think, you know, when we have spiritual ADD, it's very powerful and it's empowering us, not disjointing us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it all lends itself to itself at different points, even if we don't fully understand how and when it's going to come together. It always does in a very empowering sort of way. And, you know, I definitely plan on picking your brain too at some point about your experiences with the quantum hypnosis course, because it sounds absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it was really transformative, so the training itself. But I really didn't give much credence to the past lives until I took this course, and to see the types of healings that Dolores was, you know, experiencing with people. I mean, she took someone from like full blown AIDS to complete eradication of the illness in the body. So it's like she's having these like, she would like in one of the sessions you hear them rebuilding cartilage in someone's body, you know, and it's something that, you know, it's pretty impossible to do, but she says they work in the impossible when you take people into the subconscious realm, and like all of a sudden they're having these profound experiences with healing. And I've seen it just in the few sessions I've done since taking the course, to see people have profound healing, immediate healing. And when they listen to the recording, that they hear that they're doing it themselves, it's even crazier. You know? So I think it's something that'd be right up your alley. But again, I appreciate you coming on, and I always appreciate having you on, because it's not like an interview; it's more like having an old friend on for a chat. And that's what I think I like about what we do here. It's really, that's what our show really is having friends on for chats.
It doesn't feel like a radio show. It feels like I'm just calling you on the phone.
Right.
Which is really cool, because we talk, you know, over IM and stuff like that, but it's always good to have that voice-to-voice connection and check-in where you can hear, you know, syntax and intonation and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. So where can people find you if they want to connect with you, get a session with you, you know, experience some physical mediumship with you? Where can they find you?
Well, that might be a while, but I'll keep you guys posted how that progresses. But no, the easiest way to get a hold of me is just through my website, which is just psychictravissanders.com. If you want to get, you know, more direct, my email is just travispsychic@yahoo.com. And during the month of December, any reading that's booked through December, even if you don't have the reading in December, but if you book the reading in September, there is a special discounted rate going on for the holidays. So that's always a plus, especially because, like you said, people, it's coming up on the New Year's, and people are wanting Christmas gifts or to see what the New Year holds for them. So it's a good time to check out the services page.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Travis, for coming on. As always, I appreciate you. I appreciate our friendship, and it's always wonderful to connect with you, to hear your experiences. And thank everyone for joining us tonight and sharing this time with us. It's always a blessing to be able to do these shows. So any parting words before we sign off?
You know, I'm pretty good. Like I said, I just I hope everyone has a good holiday season. Don't give in to all the madness in the world that's going around, and just stay centered in love.
Perfect. Perfect way to end. End it in love. All right. Thank you, Travis.
See you. have a good night.
Wonderful evening. All right. You too. All right, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back. More episodes later this week. Who knows what'll happen? We'll do some readings. We'll do some healing sessions. We'll tune in. We'll connect in. And we'll empower each other on the journey. So again, thank you. Many blessings. Namaste.